My reporter's mantra is that when life doesn't go as planned, it's best to embrace it as content. In that same vein, it's the people that I meet by chance, often while I'm covering other stories or pursuing other plans, that have the most intriguing, inspiring stories. Recently, I took a risk. I responded to Oprah Winfrey's call for pitches with a proposal for a show called Off the Beaten Path, intended to make voices from people of all walks of life accessible to the masses. I took my idea all the way to Atlanta, Georgia, for the final in-person group audition. In the end, I learned that this, too, was more about the process than the end product, more about the journey than the destination. And just like my pitch, I was most inspired by the people that I met by chance. In this segment, I'm going to introduce you to five amazing women that crossed my path in Atlanta. Two deaf women from Georgia who are on a mission to make their stories heard. An oil painter and mother of two from North Carolina who uses canvas to find purpose. A mother from New York City who lost her son to suicide and is trying to do something positive in his honor. And a woman from the heart of Atlanta who is doing her part to help her community get healthy. And you're listening to the Women's Magazine on 94.1 FM or on the web at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. I sat outside in the hot, humid Georgian air in a circle of 15 participants at a group audition in a department store parking lot. I was humbled by the two women who sat to my immediate right. The women signed their pitches and then verbalized them with the help of an interpreter. I realized there was an entire segment of the population whose stories I had never tapped into. I decided to change that.
My name is Deanna Swope. I came here to the Oprah audition for Living Through the Eyes of Silence, a deaf soap opera. I want to give the world an opportunity to come and join our world and experience what life is like when you're living without sound, where you're working with people who deal with sound and learning how people who are living without sound, how they work, how they live, how they have relationships, and other different issues.
What is the hardest, most challenging part about being a deaf person in America?
For me, the hardest part is that they don't treat you the same as they treat, you know, other people. They just treat, hearing people treat you totally different than they treat other hearing people. You know, they treat deaf people as if we're something from a different world, or just, you know, you try to teach people how to make things, you know, easier for deaf people to communicate, and how to support for the deaf people who have hearing problems, who don't have a clue about how their circumstances are and how to deal with things, and how, you know, and so they stay in their own little corner instead of going out and experiencing the world. And they want to do this and become a part of America's mainstream if the hearing world would open up.
What is your dream, if anything was possible?
She wants to be a fashion model.
And I'm working on a project called The Rhythm of Change. What does change mean to you, and how does that apply to your life?
What's important about change in my life, mm-hmm. I believe that helping people become better will make a lot of things a lot change. And that's the change that is needed, is by helping people.
And what is the most important lesson that you've learned in your life, and how did you learn that?
I established in my mind that if I see something, there's nothing impossible for me because I'm deaf. It's not an excuse. I can accept that I can go out and do whatever it is and give my best, and I can do it.
And where is she from? How old is she?
She is from here in Georgia, and she's 25. 26. Oh, woman, 26. My name is Yvonne Black. Okay, from Alabama.
And how old?
Ooh, 48.
Awesome.
48.
What's the most important lesson that you've learned in your life, and how did you learn it?
I've learned to accept who I am, not letting people tell me who I am or what my life should be. Have people telling me that you are disabled. I'm able. I can do anything but hear. And I can cook. I have a college degree. She has two PhDs.
High five, sister.
You can't tell me that I can't do anything, okay? I've learned to be myself as a black, deaf woman. That's the important thing that my mama taught me, to love myself for who I am.
And what's your job?
I am state coordinator of technology services for deaf services with Alabama Department of Rehabilitation Services.
Next, I encountered Heidi Kirshner, an oil painter and mother of two, who drove from North Carolina to make her pitch about finding purpose in life.
My name is Heidi Kirshner. I'm originally from New York, and I now live in Charlotte, North Carolina, with my husband and two kids. I am a professional oil painter and slash mom. And what brings me to Georgia, I decided to hop in the car and drive on down from Charlotte and try to get my own show on Oprah's new network that she's doing.
Okay, and you were talking with me and telling me a little bit about your concept and what made you interested in being here to pitch a show to begin with. Tell me about that.
Sure, I'll tell you about it. Have you ever thought about the one thing that we all have in common? The one thing that we all long for? And it's quite simply purpose. And especially in these economically challenging times where half of us are pounding the pavement trying to get a job, or many of us are working in jobs that we're ridiculously overqualified for, we're less and less satisfied with being identified by our jobs. So I'm thinking about this concept and how I think it would work for a show, and I'm laying in Shavasana at the end of my yoga class the other day, sweating my patukas off, and my yoga instructor takes out a book called The Invitation. And it starts like this. She starts to say, "It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for. I want to know if you're willing to dream of meeting your heart's longing. It doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you are willing to look like a fool for the sake of love, your dream, or the adventure of being alive." And then she says, "It doesn't interest me what or with whom or where you've studied. I want to know what sustains you on the inside when all else falls away." And as I laid there in a sea of goosebumps, I was just, oh! I had this just, I guess what Oprah would call one of her aha moments. And I thought, this is it. This is what I want to do. I want to help people find their purpose. I want to do a show based around helping people explore, discover, and begin to fulfill their true purpose.
What made you decide to take up art to begin with?
Well, as a young child, I always was able to look at something and draw it. And people always told me, you can draw, you can paint, you can do this. But it really, for me, as I look through my work, thousands and thousands of paintings I've done, it wasn't until I had my children that I realized what that gift was to me, that it was my true sanctuary to sit down in my studio, take out my paints, because before, I think I may have taken it for granted, I guess, and I've also let go so much. I used to paint things like a photograph. I used to paint so detailed. Now I'm painting huge landscapes and contemporary pieces, and my stuff is selling like crazy. And I hate to say I'm not working as hard, but honestly, I've let go, and it works.
What caused you to make that shift, to go from making the finite details to doing this kind of abstract stuff that sounds like maybe it represents who you are in a sense?
It definitely represents who I am. I think for the longest time, I was trying so hard to be what I thought everybody else wanted me to be. And I think we all do that to a sense. We pigeonhole ourselves into thinking that, oh, well, I'm supposed to be this. I'm supposed to be this. Maybe I'm not wacky enough to be a contemporary artist. And I realized, you know what? I started meditating. I started doing yoga. I went through a huge phase after I had my son of insomnia. And the yoga, the meditation really grounded me and calmed me down, made me breathe. And when I went back to my art, it was completely different.
What inspires you for any given piece that you do? What's your source of inspiration?
Really, in a word, light. If you look at my pieces, they all have a source of light in them. Whether it's light reflecting on water or on a landscape or on you know, a dewdrop falling from a sunflower light.
And then you've been telling me about some of the things you've been doing in terms of outreach with your art. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, a couple years ago, I met this beautiful young woman, and she was this real, real Southern woman. And she was like, "Heidi, I've always wanted to paint. Would you think maybe you'd teach me?" And I started sitting in her kitchen and teaching her how to paint. And within weeks, this woman, she was in her late 60s, had never painted in her entire life, but she knew she wanted to. She knew she had something. And it just became this beautiful friendship. And I realized how much I enjoyed teaching. And I guess how, I don't know, it became kind of, I maybe it was a gift to me too. I was obviously getting something out of it as well. So I started going to classrooms and teaching, and I'm now starting to work with a battered women's shelter. And I'm finding that, I think we all know that through art you can let go, you can immerse yourself in a piece and what you're working on and the other things that are on your mind that you're consumed by or hurt by or struggling with can go away for a little while. And I found that that's just become really cathartic for people. And what they don't realize is they're giving something to me.
And you talked about a pivotal moment happening when you were in yoga class. And earlier when I was speaking with you, you said that you thought it was important that you were here because you're showing something to your own children about risk-taking.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Why is that important?
You know, we were all kind of waiting last night to see if we would get a call back for the Oprah show. And as I'm laying in bed, I'm, you know, the clock's ticking, 11, 12, 1, and no call. And I started to get upset, and I thought, you know, I really thought maybe I had a shot at this, or maybe, and when I started talking with you this morning, and I got a little emotional about it, I think it's a beautiful thing for your children to see, that you're willing to take risks, that you're willing to put yourself out there, because that teaches them that it's okay for them to do that too. We never know what's going to happen, but the only thing we know is nothing will happen if we don't try.
For more information about Heidi's work, visit www.heidikirschner.com. Kirschner is spelled KIRSCHNER.com. And you're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM or on the web at www.kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. Esmeralda is a mother from New York City who lost her son to suicide and is on a mission to make the issue of suicide less of a taboo topic.
My name is Esmeralda, and I've flown in from New York to claim my spot on the new Oprah Winfrey Network, and I would like to have my own show. And the project that I have in mind is called Get Your Wellness On.
And you told me that you went through some pretty traumatic life experiences recently that kind of perhaps inspired this project, or at least contributed to it. Would you be comfortable talking about that a little bit?
Yes, actually, you know, wellness and I have had I've been challenged in my life several times. And just last fall, when I thought that I was seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, I got a call early one morning, and I was told that my son had killed himself. He had jumped from the 10th floor of Bob's, NYU's main library. It nearly destroyed me, but... You know, what helped me get up again was being mad at suicide. And I thought, you know, suicide has messed with the wrong mother. And I went after it. So advocacy, writing, speaking helped me get back on my feet. And in the course of doing that, I've come across a lot of other people who also have a story to tell. And being heard, I've come to believe, can be part of the healing process. And this is how the idea for the show came to me, to provide a venue for people to challenge, to share their experiences, and together explore different paths to wellness. And in that way, contribute to our personal and general community wellness footprint.
I'm going to delve a little bit deeper into the tragic part of losing your son, just to kind of put that part out there. What was the backstory? What kind of mental inventory were you going through at that time?
Well, I was scouring my brain, obviously. It was out of the blue. It was a complete bolt out of the blue. And yes, he did leave a note, which really did not explain anything other than saying that... he felt that he couldn't think of a reason strong enough to bind him to this existence. As a note, it was pretty disappointing at one level because he didn't say anything. But then I realized that whatever he'd said, it would have been dissected in the same way that the having not said has been dissected. And so other than him being here, nothing else really would make any difference. So,
how old was he?
He was 20 and he was gorgeous, 6 foot tall. He was a junior at NYU. He was studying East Asian studies and his language of choice was Chinese, and which he was speaking already quite well. And he was gorgeous.
What made him interested in Chinese?
He must have been of that part of the world in a previous life, but he found the culture fascinating.
Just draw me a picture. What was your son like? What was charming about him? What was quirky about him?
You know, he was an observer. He really was. And he was an incredible judge of characters. He spoke when he needed to. And he listened more than he spoke. But when he did speak, he always said illuminating things. He was an incredible mimic. And he had an extraordinary sense of humor and of the ridiculous. He was also shy and introvert. So he spoke when he was comfortable with the people around him. And he was very intelligent. You know, he had very high SAT scores, not as good a GPA. I adored him. He drove me nuts as well.
What's his name?
Andrew Edward Kirkley.
Good. We can put a little bit of his legacy out there for people to kind of remember. And I also want to know, what's the most important lesson that you learned about yourself and about life from losing Andrew?
I've learned that there is no end to the kind of pain that you can feel, and yet there is no end to your strength and to the life that you can still live. You can still feel the pain and you can die of it, or you can feel the pain and acknowledge it and move on.
And if you had to think back through your entire life, including the loss of your son, and you had to think of one most important lesson, would it be the same one?
That we are incredibly powerful individuals, yes. And I hope that everybody can learn that and live, carry on living.
What are some things you learned about yourself from losing your son and from going through your own grieving and healing process and then to all the way up till today while you're here pitching an idea to the O Network?
You know, I choose to see the positive if I can. And I know that as much as the pain has ripped me apart and it still rips me apart, at the same time has given me such a depth, I know that I can feel. And, you know, you can feel as much pain and you can feel as much love and joy. You know, I'm certainly not shallow. Now, would I want to have learned this in a gentler way, in a joyful way? Yes, I would have preferred that. But I also know that I am grateful to have had my son. And in spite of this awful having been gouged, I think, sometimes, I would go through it again just to have him and to feel that love. And my love is even stronger now than it was before.
What's next for you?
Well, I'm going to go home and continue writing, continue my blog. I have an event coming up in September called Get Your Wellness On, which is, you know, part of it is a memorial to suicide victims that nobody talks about, but also I'm advocating yoga and meditation as a form of wellness. And I do think that if children were taught yoga and meditation at a very early age, they would have much better tools with which to learn about themselves. While the phone will ring at some point, and in the meantime, I'm going to do that, you know, keep doing that.
For more information about Esmeralda's work, or to find resources for suicide prevention or coping with depression, visit Esmeralda's website at www.foreverinvictus.com. And that's Forever Invictus, INVICTUS.com. Finally, I wanted to experience more of Atlanta before I got on my plane. So I typed vegetarian restaurant into my GPS, and I ended up at a one-of-a-kind, soulful vegan restaurant in the heart of Atlanta, run by a woman named Princess Dixon. Here's her story.
This is Princess Dixon of here at 875 York Avenue at Healthful Essence Restaurant.
Tell me a little bit about your restaurant. It has a full menu with everything you'd find, only it's vegan. Tell me what helped you come up with the concept and what some of and the items that you have here.
The items is coming off of the Caribbean style food. I started in New York by the World Trade Center about 20 years ago.
And what made you decide to do the vegan route?
Vegan route because I feel that it's much better for you to eat vegan food. Because I've been doing it for 20 odd years and I feel great.
And how did you become a vegan? What made you do that to begin with?
Because I read that meat makes you age faster. So I say I don't want to get old fast and I want to have energy. That's why I changed my diet to vegan.
Talk me through some of your favorite items and tell me how you came up with the ideas for them.
The Korean goat, it came from the goat because I lived in Jamaica for a while. So I had to find something that kind of, and flavor it, similar to the curry goat. You know, that's real goat, but mine is vegetarian. So I had to do something like that. I have jerk bean curd. That's awful Jamaican too. What else we have? We have curry vegetables. We do two types of curries, curry and goat and curry vegetables. The country where I'm from, we do a lot of curries because there's a lot of East Indians there.
What country are you from?
Guyana, South America. And rotis, we do a lot there because growing up with lots of Indians, that's why I incorporate that. And I have collard greens because living here, people love collard greens, so I add that to my menu. And the plantain, that's Caribbean. Brown rice and peas, Caribbean. And I do a chickpea patty because many people are staying away from soy and all these different things, so it's simple.
How long have you had this restaurant here?
Here is going 2 years, but I'm here in Georgia for about 10 years, and this is my fourth spot.
What's the most interesting thing about what you do and coming up with this concept and making food for people?
The most interesting thing is when people finish eating, the plate is very clean, and they all enjoy it.
And if you had to think about what the most important lesson that you learned on your life journey was that led you to the place you're in today, what would that be?
Is that I feel good when people say that they enjoy the food and I love what I do. So it doesn't put any stress on me. I love to cook.
And finally, I'm working on something called the Rhythm of Change. Tell me, what does change mean to you and how does it apply to your life?
Well, I've already changed long years ago. I change because of the way I feel when I eat certain things and stuff like that.
So you changed by becoming a vegan.
Right.
And you also, you were born in Guyana.
South America.
And then walk me through how you got from Guyana to here, where you were and how you ended up here.
Went to London, married to a Jamaican, went to Jamaica, from Jamaica to New York. Because here, New York is close, very close to Jamaica, just 3 hours.
Finally, how did you end up from New York to Georgia?
From New York, somebody told me to come here because they needed a good vegetarian cook here. So I pack up what I was doing on the streets because I'd done it 10 years. I wanted to open a restaurant and it was easy for me to do it here because there was a space here. So that's how I end up here.
Anything you want to add?
The only thing I would love to add is that I would like more people to know about Healthful Essence.
Why should someone come to Healthful Essence?
Because people need to change their diets now. And we have this stuff here. For a person who is coming off meat, we have something similar. And if you want to go higher, we have raw food also.
And finally, how did you learn all these recipes?
Just by my own creation. My own creation.
Awesome. So is this your passion? Food is your passion?
Food is my passion.